This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. I'm John Batchelor, and I go to a lengthy piece in Foreign Affairs about Mexico, about the presidency of López Obrador. AMLO, called affectionately. Very popular. I emphasize that the president of Mexico is extremely popular with his electorate. Years after his election, despite the, what you'd have to say, atmosphere of trouble around the world, the retreat from globalization, the inflation, the recovery from the pandemic, war in Europe, whose side are you on? All of that, and López Obrador remains popular with his electorate. He was disappointed at the so-called midterms because he looked to strengthen his hand in the legislature. It didn't happen, but he still remains popular. And therein lies a puzzle for other presidents in the new world. Professor, I'm reading Foreign Affairs that to regard Mr. López Obrador as a performative president, a performative presidency. How do you take that? Is that a compliment? And what does it describe about the way he demonstrates what has been called the militarization of governance?
John, I would use another P word, populist. And to me, this is something that connects our conversation about Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil with AMLO, although very different sides of the political coin, which is that I think both AMLO and Jair Bolsonaro, among others, connect to their bases because their bases identify with them and the way that they speak rather than the policy performance. So absolutely right. You see that AMLO continues to have approval rates about 60% that people like President Joe Biden would probably be jealous and envious of. And yet at the same time, if you look at the business classes, if you look at the media, if you look at the politicians, especially in the traditional parties displaced by AMLO's movement, you see really just a scathing and brutal array of criticism, everything from his handling of the COVID pandemic with a lack of spending to his dismantling of Mexico's once relatively decent healthcare system with his new INSABI organization replacing Seguro Popular with attempts to institute anti-democratic behaviors, whether it's an attempt to eliminate the National Electoral Institute, to give enormous additional powers to the Mexican military, not only in public security, but infrastructure construction, oftentimes undercutting some of the legal norms that have to do with environmental and other consulting. You see, criticisms about the people that the way he's dealt with energy and especially undercutting clean energy and continue to pour good money after bad with Pemex, disputes with the United States as well as Canada, and if it takes a lot for a leftist to get on the bad side of Justin Trudeau in Canada, and so illustrative of some of the frustration you see within NAFTA. And so the irony is that across the board, concerns over AMLO's policies and security and economics and everything else, and yet this tremendous popularity. But also, if you listen to him, he conducts long, extensive, very personalistic conversations. They call them his mañaneras, basically the morning briefing, when he reaches out, much like Hugo Chavez did in Venezuela, and connects to the Mexican people. And so, you may not agree with his policies, but if you don't trust the media in general, you hear this reasonable sounding, plain talking, grandfatherly like figure, and you say, I don't know why everything is going to heck in a handbag, but it can't be this guy's fault. And so there's a real disconnect, like in many other places, between personal identification with AMLO and his connection with the people versus some very real concerns, what he's doing to Mexican democracy, the Mexican economy, and Mexico's integration with the rest of Latin America.
About the economy, there are questions raised about the USMCA. To your understanding, is that a stable agreement between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, or is López Obrador introducing again negotiating positions?
I think at the end of the day, John, USMCA, despite the concerns, will hold up. As I noted before, and as you note, right now, the United States, after much frustration and also joined by Canada, has initiated the process of taking disputes through the dispute resolution mechanism. We have to remember that actually USMCA is actually basically an updated, in many ways, modernized version of the old, also good NAFTA trade agreement that we had since 1994 that's been so important for Mexico's integration into the North American economy. I think at the end of the day, and this reflects a series of other disputes that has to do with the protection of the electricity sector, the protection of the oil sector, mistreatment of U.S. and other investors. So there's certainly a lot of what I would say trade disputes. Certainly AMLO has been in his discourse very nationalistic, but my good feeling is at the end of the day, AMLO recognized that it's USMCA and NAFTA is vital for Mexico. He played along and I think worked with the Trump administration during that renegotiation. And so I think the current storm, despite his dissatisfaction and populist rhetoric, he will probably find a way to make Mexico live within USMCA currently. But there are serious concerns about how he treats U.S. investors and the pressure that his internal policies are putting on this very close and very critical collaboration between Mexico, the U.S. and Canada.
In the Denise Dresser piece in Foreign Affairs, a term of art that used in the headlines, authoritarian populism. Now, Professor, here's a paradox. If I follow correctly, during the campaign for the presidency, which Mr. Lopez Obrador ran for many times before, he said he would demilitarize the government. Since his assumption of the presidency, the critics say he's militarized the government, and this will be a legacy after he leaves office. Therefore, the paradox is this. Is militarizing the government popular? It would appear so. There doesn't seem to be any need to hide it from the population. If anything, the hugs, not bullets, was a way of talking about not gunplay, but the militarization suggests the guns are there, they're just not being used against the cartels. So help me sort this out. Is it popular to have an authoritarian populist?
Great question, John. And for me, going back to our conversation with Jair Bolsonaro and others, as a populist, what AMLO does is popular. His supporters follow him, however he may change his mind. We saw this with people like Hugo Chavez as well. You can completely reverse your policy direction, but as long as you maintain the trust and the identity of your supporters, it works out well. And so absolutely, there was a dissatisfaction in Mexico with the hundreds of thousands of people who had been killed or disappeared in the war against the cartels, which really took off in 2006 with the frontal involvement of the military by Felipe Calderón and continued with some changes under the sexenio of Enrique Peña Nieto. And so it was that dissatisfaction that AMLO leveraged to get into office. But I think what he found, and having worked with the Mexican military myself, despite some of their imperfections, they are a very capable organization. And so AMLO finding himself in need of a very capable organization and frankly, having difficulties in his reorganization of the Mexican security sector, found that he continued to depend on the Mexican military, not only to maintain security in the streets and firepower against these increasingly well-armed and increasingly violent cartels and other groups throughout the country, but also found that the military was very useful to do other things that his other agencies were not necessarily very efficient in doing. And so the military came to assume control over a number of infrastructure projects, including his new signature airport project, and has now been set up to head a variety of other agencies. And so I think it's the personal relationship that AMLO has built with General Sandoval in Sedena, the Mexican army, with General Bucio within the National Guard, which has now been moved under the Mexican army, et cetera, that really the military has become, because of its discipline, because of its capability, a tool that AMLO finds that he can't do without. And at the end of the day, he tries to explain that to his population who, you know, trusts and follows him more than they seem particularly concerned with the abrupt policy reversal that represents and forgetting a little bit about, although not everyone has forgotten, the sense of frustration with the desire to get the military off the streets in terms of Mexico's public security crisis.
And so we can measure that López Obrador has found a successful way to govern Mexico. He's both popular and authoritative, and the military is responsive to him. And we can presume that though he is not going to run for re-election, it's a one-term office, that he will have much to say about his successor and that the model that he is now employing will continue into the future. Is that a negative for the USMCA, for the relations along the border, that López Obrador will have continuing influence in the years ahead?
In my opinion, John, it's negative both for the U.S. and USMCA, but it's also negative for Mexico. This was the same thing that happened with Hugo Chavez as Venezuela descended into authoritarianism. It's one thing to say that a leader is able to connect with the supporters and that he can continue thus to mount a majority or at least authority to impose his rule, even as democratic institutions are undercut. Now, AMLO is not quite going as quickly in the authoritarian direction as, for example, Hugo Chavez did. But what's really happening in Mexico is, although AMLO personally remains popular and although there is some level of governance, thanks in part to also the disparate Morena political machine and its control of the Mexican states, as well as national government, what you see is really an erosion, a collapse, deterioration of other Mexican economic and political institutions. And so continuing problems with oil generation, continuing deterioration in terms of power with his privileging of CFE, continuing problems with the supply chains with USMCA, continuing problems with institutions, both electoral institutions and others, continuing problems with the health system, such as the performance of Insabi in providing healthcare for Mexicans, et cetera, et cetera. And so really what worries me is that underlying AMLO's political survival, and it's questioning who will continue. It seems almost sure that it will be another Morena candidate because the other parties have not really united effectively to present an alternative, but it's not clear whether it will be his chosen, or many people believe his preferred alternative, Claudia Sheinbaum, or whether it will be somebody like his current foreign minister, Marcelo Ebrard, who AMLO doesn't entirely feel aligned with. But at the end of the day, his ability to govern and be politically popular hides really the deterioration of the situation in Mexico, the trade relationship, supply chains, and frankly, the U.S.-Mexico relationship. Although I would say that gifted diplomats on the U.S. side are doing their best to make the best of the situation.
And therefore, what we look in Mexico to find is a strong man on the left with a military attached to him. If that was a strong man on the right, Evan, it would very much resemble the fears about Brazil, wouldn't it? It's a turn of the page. I understand we're in something like, what do they call it, mockingly, a pink tide. Sometimes it flows one way, sometimes it flows the other. But authoritarian seems to be the common link between all of these successful presidents.
Absolutely, John. It's the same issue with Nayib Bukele, for example, in El Salvador. While the political trend right now is on towards leftist populism a little bit more than rightist populism, there's certainly a broader trend, which is amidst fiscal pressures and economic pressures, a real frustration and disillusionment with traditional democracy and traditional institutions, and thus a desire to move towards trust of populist leaders who promise change if only given additional authorities. And certainly the moving away from a more technocratic, rationalistic, and more democratically controlled balance of power type of democratic system that we're looking for. And for me, that presents grave long-term risks, both from the left and the right, to the health and well-being of not only democracy, but frankly, prosperity and market economies and the protection of rights in Latin America, the region to which we are directly connected by geography, by family, and by commerce.
This is the New World Report. We're headed to a tragedy, Haiti. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.